Welcome to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People. This show can be heard on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Friday at 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to dreamvision7radio.com, click Listen Live, and enjoy the show.
Hello, this is Dr. Emmett Miller. Welcome back to Conversations with Extraordinary People. Here, our goals are to look beyond the superficial, to encounter the essence of the human experience, to explore new and creative ways of meeting life's obstacles, challenges, and opportunities successfully. Our purpose is to discover new and powerful ways of healing, balancing, and optimizing function of mind, body, emotion, behavior, and spirit. And at this time in history, we desperately need to heal and transform at both the individual and the collective level. In each episode, we bring you intelligent conversations with the movers and shapers who have created the new medicine and other holistic approaches to individual and collective healing and are still contributing wisdom and practical guidance. Along with this, you will receive practical tools and experiential guided imagery meditations to help integrate the wisdom our guest brings us. So, once again, it's time to relax, focus your mind, and open your heart to the power within. And welcome to another paradigm-shattering conversation. Today's guest is David McKenzie, the developer of WisdomRx.com. David is a medical intuitive who's also a teacher, a consultant, public speaker, and more, as you will soon learn. David has a fascinating history. He's a visual communicator and has been a professional photographer working for such organizations as Architectural Digest, Vogue, and Bazaar, doing photography and photo design. He has taught at the University of Texas, where he has been the head of the photo design department. He went on to do a number of other things, but I'll stop in a moment so he can tell you more about that. David and I met in our mutual travels through the nearby country of Mexico. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome you, David. Welcome to Conversations with Extraordinary People.
I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I want to presence my beloved ally, Susan Perkins, who is the partner also in WisdomRx. And even though she's not sitting here, she sits in my heart as we're together here. She's part of her love helps me be the best me I've ever been. I'm the student of her love.
That's one of the things that really attracted me to you, because the two of you work so well together. And I'm hoping to have her here for an interview, because I'd like to hear the distaff side of it as well.
She'll be glad to do that.
So say a little bit about what a medical intuitive is. So I know many of our listeners, and most of those who listen to this show are fairly sophisticated in the fields of healing and have explored spirituality. Most people know Carolyn Mace or Mona Lisa, who talk about medical intuitive medical intuition. How would you describe what you call medical intuition?
That's a really great question, because I'm always grateful to Carolyn, because her first book helped me understand the roots of why my perception works the way that it does. I've also learned that medical intuition, as it comes through different individuals, presents itself in different ways. For me, It's a bushel basket term that describes how I learned how to be with people.
Mm.
How I learned how to serve what was ailing them. It first turned on in me when I was a kid. I was 5. This is in Toronto. My father ran gambling operations. My mother was a beautician. This was not a New Age family. This is 1955.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm 66 now. My brother-in-law is there. My sister is there. She's pregnant. They're going to get married. It was a kind of a tense lunch.
Mm-hmm.
He takes me to the bathroom and he says, like how people talk to kids like they're not there, but they're just talking. And he says, I got these terrible toothaches. Oh my God, my teeth are really hurting. And I pipe in as a 5-year-old and say, you know, if I had these long Chinese needles and I put them in your mouth, that pain would completely disappear. And he, you know, he does what Danny does and takes me back to the table. And there's much guffawing about how Davey wants to put these long needles in his mouth to make pain go away. And I sat at the table and went, I need to really watch my mouth. I realized right then and there that that natural outcropping of my childhood innocence, which I experienced, by the way, all of us had as children. Mm-hmm. We all had that ability to see beyond what we were taught to believe was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it just never went away.
Mm-hmm.
It got buried, suppressed, hidden, frightened from, but it would never go away. And it shows up in our work with people in the form of, initially people would come to me, here's how it really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I had a child born terminally ill.
Mm-hmm.
I was a young man. I was being a photographer, trying to live my life, just to live. I was a back-to-lander hippie photographer guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had this child born terminally ill and I freak out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm angry at God. I'm livid at God.
Mm-hmm.
I offered my life so my child would be born okay. It did not go well. And in truth, there was nothing wrong with him. Everything was wrong with me. I was angry and unaccepting of his life force. He died. And by good grace and a lot of love, I got to the other side. My marriage didn't, many things didn't make it. But I got to the other side. And people started coming to me because I'd made it to the other side of outrage, helplessness, stultifying sadness, grief. And parents whose kids were dying wanted to talk to somebody who wasn't a theorist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I started talking to people about how they could live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We talked earlier about buoyancy, how they could feel their start to float again and not feel like they were drowning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we serve people. We help them know they're not going to drown.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the condition, they have something inside them that is true, vital, never dies, and can sustain them even in the most hellacious, nasty circumstances. They have something inside them that is indomitable. We help them know that.
Mm-hmm.
Know it.
And then, how did you discover that you were a visual communicator?
Well, after I decided to shut my mouth as a 5-year-old. Not talk about putting Chinese needles in people's mouths. You know, there was no acupuncture in my gambling operation, beauty salon family at that time.
Uh-huh.
By good luck, grace, right place, right time. Growing up in Toronto, Canada, Pierre Trudeau, the Prime Minister at the time, realized that the only way Canada could sustain its identity without American media invading and destroying the fabric of the country was that we had to have, as a country, all of our own media producers and graphic designers. So the cry goes out across the land. Any young person, and I was 16 at the time, who had any kind of unusual vision, I qualified, would become a Swiss-German-trained graphic designer or media producer to help push back the influence of American media.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the benefit of an amazing training with European designers to become this advocate for Canadian identity, Canadian visual consciousness. One of my teachers was in college, was one of the guys that started Cirque du Soleil. I was blessed with just really great people who helped me be, helped me do what I loved. Mm-hmm. And I had this natural ability to see differently. I just never thought about that's what I was going to do. I just got given the gift of that opportunity to live with, thrive
with. And you were, did that through photography.
Yeah. I mean, initially trained as a graphic designer. That was the German training to be, learn typography and art history and all the cultural motifs that drive visual communication. And then one day in college, first year of college, when I had to specialize, I had a photography teacher named Michael Dumouriez, whom I bless. Dutch guy. And he says, you're going to like this. It's fast. And I took a picture and then I processed the picture and went, oh my God, that was it. Something clicked on, and I said, this is me. And then from that moment, I burned. I burned. I wanted it. I lived it, ate it, drank it, breathed it every way I could. And I got to do amazing stuff because I burned for it. I know what it's like to burn, to want something really bad, and just work it and work it and work it. Develop mastery. I was masterful at it.
The fire in the belly.
Fire in the belly. No kidding. Yeah.
The gleam.
I know you get that.
Yes. And then you went on, and then you did some work with swimming, yes?
Well, my first jobs were, my father ran the racetracks in Ontario. Gambling, like horses. So I worked at the track, various jobs. My first job was organizing paper clubs. Remember that? The racetrack. And then I learned how to swim. I learned how to swim at summer camp. And my second job was teaching swimming. And I wasn't like a jock, but I think I wanted to water ski. And the only way you could water ski at this camp was to swim. And I wanted it. So I learned how to swim and I overcame my terror. I was scared of swim. I'm just terrified. And I learned how to not to be terrified. And I became a pretty good swimming teacher. And in this place I taught in Toronto, I would always get the problem cases. And I never knew why. But I kind of figured out eventually that it's because people felt safe with me because I'd overcome being terrified of water. And one day I helped this older British guy, kind of thin British older man. God, he was probably like 50 years old. I don't know how old he was. He looked like an ancient guy. I remember his real white Canadian body, And I knew that if people could float, they could swim. If they could feel buoyancy, because everybody can float. Everybody has buoyancy. I knew it. And I held him in the water. I just helped him know he could float. I held his head in his spine. I just kind of rocked him in the water. All of a sudden, the guy floated. The look in his face was like, wow, my God, I'm not going to die. And then he floats, and it went through my hands into my body, and it was like the coolest sensation. I'm like, whoa, this dude is floating. Like, whoa, that's so amazing. Can I have some of that? And that moved me to help people swim. And it's part of the work with people now is I know what it's like to drown. I've had lots of dirt on my face. I have not there have been plenty of times in my life I have not had a graceful life. I have fallen down in the mud, and I've had people invite me up. And so I know what it's like to get my buoyancy back. Same with Susan. Susan had a blood clot and became paralyzed and had to learn how to walk all over again.
Wow.
Took her 5 years, orthoscopic surgery, got a huge blood clot, died, came back. She had to learn how to walk again.
Wow.
So, we know what it's like to be facing the dirt.
Legend of the wounded healer.
Amen, brother. I'm grateful that I've had the kindness and love of others, the compassion of others through my own lumpiness.
Wow.
So I could learn how to walk again or float or wash my face off. I had a woman, I was in Nova Scotia, I was teaching at the art school there. I was like art star boy, head of the photo department. My life was an unmitigating wreck. I mean, a wreck. I was a train wreck in every direction one could imagine, but I was an art star boy, but I was a wreck. And I went to this woman, her name is Divya Prabha, whom I bless. Again, one of those people who, you know how people show up in your life? Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Right? People show up in their lives and they kind of go, like they're like a blessing point and they're life changers.
Right? Yes.
And they can say one sentence to us. Mm-hmm. Like, you got that back? Like one sentence, like, mm-hmm. Well, left turn.
Right, yes.
And she said to me, she was talking to you going to Kripalu Yoga. This is 35 years ago. To something called an Inner Quest Intensive, which was not on my radar. I was like a, mm-hmm. you know, whatever I was at that time. And I was like, you know, with my objections and no, I can't do that. And they all wear white and blah, 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 blah. I was wearing black. Mm-hmm. She said, what do you got to lose? And she really meant the question. Uh-huh. And all I could say was, nothing. And that's when I learned the gift of a question from someone.
Okay? Yeah, it reminds me of an important question in my life. When I was in medical school, I was married and I had a kid. I was this young guy and I was really unhappy. I had depression. I mean, I have a serious family history of depression. Nobody knew anything in those days. It wasn't even called depression. But as a student, you get to go see a psychiatrist.
Of course.
So I said, okay, I'll go see this psychiatrist. And we didn't have to pay for it. And I guess on my second or maybe first or second visit, and I guess I was talking about my tension, and he said, well, you know, why do you tense up like that? Well, I said, you know, because I just don't want to be surprised by anything. I mean, I was a pretty uptight guy, and I wanted to know everything. You know, it's kind of like I wanted to be ready for whatever came along. And he said to me, he said, "What's the matter? Don't you like surprises?" And when he said that, immediately I thought about Christmas, opening a present that I didn't know what was in it. I thought about birthdays, and I mean, suddenly for the first time, I realized, no, wait a minute, that's not right. I like surprises. And that was a point where I said, wait a minute, so what is it that I am having trouble with? Mm-hmm. That just kind of started the wheels turning in a different direction. But as you say, you know, there was a question. And
as you're saying it, I'm thinking of like pregnant question. Now, people talk about pregnant pauses.
Exactly.
That's like a pregnant question.
Yes.
We've been delivered by pregnant question.
So what were the pregnant moments that began to turn you from the world of being this visual communicator in terms of working from behind a mm-hmm. camera or a department or whatever to actually bringing buoyancy and directly into the lives of people by mm-hmm. your interaction?
Hmm. I've been thinking about this lately. There was something essentially me, like essentially David. I'm currently called David. I mean, I've incarnated other times. I know that about me, mm-hmm. but I'm currently called David. Mm-hmm. But there's something essentially David that wouldn't go away. And it kept getting louder and bigger. And the thing that got louder and bigger was I needed to be in direct service, direct evolutionary connection with people who had need, with people who needed to claim their own physicianship. Because I knew what it was like when I had my own physicianship. A turning point in that was, again, I got a lot of people I bless because they showed up in my life. There's a doctor in Austin, Texas. I think he's still alive. His name is Donald Mannerberg. Radiant human being. I had what I called a heart event where I died, woke up, had massive cognitive dissonance, but I was like, geez, I had this dream I died. I'm kind of talking like this. But I went to the studio anyway because I was in a big job. I go to the studio, my crew shows up and they go, what the hell's with you? I looked bad. So I called Dr. Manterberg, Don, who knew me and knew this other part of me, because I wasn't out with my other part. Mm-hmm. I'd meditate, I'd done all this kind of stuff, but I wasn't out with my hidden part. He says to me, "Well, you can come on in, but I'm not going to find a whole lot wrong with you, because I think God hit restart."
Ah,
no shit. "And you're going to have a whole new life." He said, "We'll do all these tests, but I'm not going to find a lot wrong with you. Oh, and by the way, I know you know this. I'm not in charge of your living nor dying. I know you know that, but I need to say it to you. Come on in now."
Uh-huh.
And that was the end, because I hurt for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of my identity as David McKenzie, guy who taught at University of Texas, David McKenzie who made pictures for Vogue, David McKenzie who was married to Martha. That was the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was all over. Mm-hmm. And I was lumpy, achy, and scared. But something shifted in me, and my legs had to move in another way. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really started to open to, I need to live myself and serve out into the world in a different way. I didn't have a marketing plan. I just knew I had to surrender to what my talents, heart, the roots of my being needed me to be.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense how I said that?
Yeah, yeah.
Many blessings to Donald Manterberg.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a sacred calling in a way. How old were you at that time?
God, I don't know. I was 45.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
It was the end of my marriage to Martha. It was the end of all that stuff. All over. Wow. I was about that was a turning point.
Wow.
And then I read Carolyn's book, and something clicked in me and went, oh, okay. And as that click happened, you know how that happens in all of us where we just kind of get our calling? Even if we long for our calling, it'll turn on. I didn't know I longed for this, but I did. And then people just started to show up. And they'd say, "Can you help me with thus and so?"
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my perception, which is a bit like an MRI.
Mm-hmm.
But I also got the spiritual inputs from their angelic team, the lineage inputs from their timelines and different incarnations. Mm-hmm. And because I have a kind of science brain, mm-hmm. like I said to you earlier, like when I first learned to work in the laboratory to make photographs, we wore white coats. And I was a geek that way.
Yeah.
I got off on it. So I have a disciplined science mind. So I'm not afraid of that kind of data. But I started working with people to help them know they weren't lost. They could get a different take on an illness that nobody could find a solution for.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it this fluid in my lungs will not go away? Well, it would turn out there was trapped grief in those lungs. Mm-hmm. The lungs had never exhaled, in 30 years. Mm-hmm. They'd been scared and had grief stuck in them for 30 years and never gassed off. And they would gas that off and it would go away.
Yeah.
They claimed their own miracle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't cause the miracle. I don't do healing, but mm-hmm. by God, I know mm-hmm. healing happens. Mm-hmm. I know healing can be supported and enlivened because it's our birthright. I know that.
Mm-hmm. And well, it's like the famous physician Albert Schweitzer yeah. said in one of his graduation talks to a group of physicians, he said, "The only ones of you who will ever be happy are those who have found a way to serve and set yourself about it." Mm-hmm. And it's true, not only physicians, mm-hmm. but I think all of us, it's what it's about is finding, well, we're here to serve. And it's curious how we would sort of like that awakening to come upon us like the sweet smell of roses or like a beauty. But sometimes it comes as enormous pain.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times I've heard, you know, Carl Simon and then I were the ones who started the first cancer support programs back in the 70s. You're welcome. But it's amazing how many times I've heard people say cancer was a gift.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why is that? Say, what has been your experience?
Well, I'm just looking at my hair standing, I think, like, okay, how much of the radical edge are we going to go to?
All the way.
You want to go?
All the way.
All right, then let's go. Now, it's my experience, and I had a mate, quote unquote, and I'll say the standard sentence first, die from mm-hmm. inflammatory breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as it turns out, people don't die from cancer. They die from blocked kidneys,
mm-hmm.
a stroke,
mm-hmm.
renal failure. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's what happens.
Right.
So I had intimate, I was the wound care guy on that necrotic wound.
Mm.
Yeah. I've learned that what we call cancer, especially after the trillions of dollars of investment, never mind the trillions of dollars that will be spent on treatment this year, there's lots of new information, no new knowledge. I have this very good other scientific sources. I'll leave them out for a host of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we misname evolutionary energy. I believe that inside cancer is an evolutionary force that we have pathologized. That doesn't mean there isn't suffering. That doesn't mean we can't care for it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we're looking at this condition called cancer with the wrong lens. And I refer to Rupert Sheldrake here in his most amazing new book called Science Set Free, where he invites a reframing of what we call science and its measures. I believe that's the answer we're looking for, because we're naming something the disease that may not be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. 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 It could be something else, like...
What if it's a life force? What if it's a wake-up call? I have a client right now. Amazing, amazing young 37-year-old woman who calls breast cancer the greatest revolutionary event in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's working now with her mother's, quote, dying, unquote, through cancer, helping her claim that liberty,
mm-hmm.
claim
mm-hmm.
that revelation, not become burdened by the darkness of the disease, but the light of its opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, her name is Melody.
Sweet
Melody.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, back in the 70s and the early part of the 80s, my goal was to try to determine what the essence of healing was.
Uh-huh.
I was a mathematician who went into...
I love this part of you.
Went into medicine to see how medicine could be transformed, because doctors were still thinking according to the Newtonian, Cartesian model. They thought patients were just pieces of things stuck together, and you could like examine the arm and you could heal the person by healing their arm.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we cut the cancer out and we say we've healed the person, but sometimes in the process of going through the surgery and the torture that people have in the hospital following the surgery would be far more damaging to them than the cancer ever
yes.
was. So my work consisted at that time of doing a lot of deep hypnosis, deep trance hypnosis, and age regression analysis. While I was in high school, and even before I became interested in math and physics, I became fascinated with radios. But one of the highest points in my life was a course I took, I guess, in the fifth grade or something, called electrical wiring. And there was a battery, and there was a bell, and a button. And you could push the button over here, and the bell over there would ring, and that blew my mind. You know, and there it was. I was seeing the guts of how this happened, and I said, there's something incredible here. And then I became... So I went on to work in radio, and built hi-fi systems before we had stereo. And for fun, I would read the Amateur Radio Relay League handbook and math books and electronics books.
A real knee slapper, huh?
So then when I got into medicine and realized, pretty quickly realized this, because people didn't know how to operate their brains. I had also been a computer programmer. So I realized that the left brain worked very much like a digital computer, and that if that computer's not programmed right, you're going to get all kinds of illnesses and dysfunctions, which may show up as physical, mental, emotional, or behavioral problems. So let's get to the root. But here's a person, and we're born pure. We're born without this stuff. So there had to be some place along the line where we got it. So just the way you would signal trace a radio, by using deep hypnosis, I would signal trace persons afraid of people. I would go into hypnosis and go to a time when you felt afraid last week. Now go back a few years. No, go back a dozen years or so. And eventually I'd say go back to the very first moment in your life that you ever had that experience, really, to the traumatizing event. The vast majority of all of our problems, mental, physical, emotional, behavioral, are the result of trauma. We're all suffering from PTSD. Not necessarily we were raped or beaten, but I mean, to live in the world, you know, as a woman, if you come out of a supermarket at night and you have to walk to your car, you're afraid. I mean, it's trauma just to live in society, to be bombarded with the news that reaches us, the kind of ideas of pedagogy and child. So we go back to that moment when the person was abused and basically re-script that moment in time. People would abreact as they would go through it. They would cry, and I would allow them to discharge all of that emotional energy that's been backed up in their limbic system. They'd release that, and I would help them find a new way to conceptualize what was going on at that point. And then we'd come back through time and reprogram the other experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's how I happened to invent the idea of putting guided imagery on cassette tapes. Because before we had cassette tapes, people had, you need to practice this every day because you need to train your brain to do it the new way. And finding out then it's those moments of when we get traumatized in our lives is where something gets suppressed within us. And it's in later on in our lives, we can have an illness, a disease, or a depression, or an anxiety, whatever, which is really coming out of that original trauma. And this is how it can be a gift, because it can lead us to basically rewrite the script within ourselves so that we don't face the world with the same limitations we had up until that moment. And everything in us is fighting to keep the world the way it has been, and we have no idea that we're producing our own problems. But at those moments, there's that breakthrough. But sometimes, like with cancer, you just can't pretend you don't have it.
No. It's a real presence with a real message.
Yes.
You're describing for me what I talk about as the snap at the end of the whip.
Yeah.
Like someone can have... I had a client, amazing woman, teacher, music person, remarkable person, now deceased, glorious being, who had an interesting cancerous tumor in her ear. And it turned out that was the snap at the end of her whip of listening to her father's scorching, Bible slamming, preaching about hell, fire, and brimstone for anyone who deviated from anything that was a scripted reality.
Yeah.
And that tumor was the snap at the end of that terror she had lived in. Mm-hmm. And I'm heartened that you get that. I mean, you know, I want us all to get that, you know, we can look at a symptom and you know, you reference how, you know, people just looked at an arm. Well, that's an arm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old motorcycle racer. And I was warming up one day and got terribly out of shape, jumping over something. I was about 15 feet up in the air off road. And I jumped on this thing and I flew it through the air. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to crash. And this is really going to hurt bad. And for strange reasons, my body took over and I landed the bike. I rode 75 or 100 feet, stood back and looked at this ramp I'd gone up. Standing completely still, I fell over and crushed my foot.
Oh.
Standing completely still with both feet on the ground. This is in Santa Fe. I go to this naturopath and she says to me, you must have really wanted to have that accident.
Oh.
And it was like a moment of God speaking again. I thought, yeah. I played the whole thing out And I created the accident right then and there. I did it with my mind. I knocked myself over. Mm-hmm. I was the snap at the end of my own whip.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm liking that. You know, what we're talking about here is building momentum,
because mm-hmm.
of what you've already done and what we're doing in Wisdom RX.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You help people say, whoa, we're looking at the snap. Let's look where it starts, because the snap at the end of the whip starts in my wrist, not at the end of the whip.
Yeah. Well, I'll come back in a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about how that applies and people's individual lives as well as with the groups that you work with. I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to Conversations with Extraordinary People, which is a publicly supported program. We thank you for your support. And you support us by visiting our multimedia website, drmiller.com, drmiller.com, where you will find my videos, archives of these conversations in case you've missed any in the past, or if you'd like to let someone you know about what you're listening to right now. You'll also find a plethora of information on mind-body medicine, self-healing, software for the mind, and other things, as well as the free e-newsletter, Healing Times, and the regular free guided imagery and meditation gifts that I offer throughout the year. You'll learn about it when I send you an email every month or two or three. You can also support us more directly by visiting our online store, which is at shopdrmiller.com. And there you'll find my audio and video programs featuring self-applied deep relaxation and guided imagery meditations for healing your body, balancing and invigorating your emotions, overcoming bad habits, and achieving peak performance. You can learn to re-script your mind and rewire your brain, transform your body and your life. You can also support us by telling your friends, clients, patients, and those on your mailing list about what we offer. And join in the conversation on our Facebook page, facebook.com/AskDrMiller. And to learn a little bit more about David McKenzie, today's guest, and about Susan, his beautiful wife, by going to wisdomrx.com. What else might they find there, David?
I've got about 30 videos. Talking about, one of my favorite ones is stop waiting and lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find that people who wait to live, wait to do what they love, wait to enliven what's just like crackling alive in them, mm-hmm. they gain weight.
Uh-huh.
Because all that passion and juice they want to use turns into extra mass. The mm-hmm. creativity there creates itself in a bulkier body.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite ones.
Uh-huh.
There's another one called, I love these videos, they're called How to Take the Shift from Revolution, where you just go around and around and around and around, and make it turn into evolution so you can move.
Yes.
I use a bicycle that I let go of, and it flies across the driveway.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of information there from our blogs, where we've had so much learning from our clients. I mean, we learn every day from every client.
Mm-hmm.
We learn what we need to learn, Susan and David learn, about how to liberate their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Because our clients, we learn together.
And the clients you work with are?
Interestingly, mostly female.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say over the years, 80% of our clients have been women. I've thought a lot about that. I think it's that women have a different kind of openness to possibility than men. And I've sat in a lot of men's circles. But men have a different way they run themselves. And maybe it's the way Susan and I work, but that doesn't mean we work with men. But most of our clients are women. That's that. And we have clients who are post-breast cancer, post-ovarian cancer, ovarian cancer, asthma, mystery illnesses that they can't seem to find a definition for. Like, why would that be in my lungs like that? But more and more, we're having people come to us who want to redefine how they're living. And more particularly, want to create a definition of health and well-being that's radical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we've learned that when people get sick, and you know this,
mm-hmm.
I know you know this, when they get sick, a lot of the shock that's present is like, well, wait a minute, I'm a vegan who does yoga and does Tai Chi. How in God's name can I have ovarian cancer? Like, I can't have this, right?
Yeah.
Because I create these notions inside me that say, well, if I take selenium or I do this or I, you know, jog or whatever I want to do, I'll never die.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never get sick. And I've learned, my lesson is, after intimacy with working with people through all these years, 20 years, hundreds and hundreds mm-hmm. of people,
mm-hmm.
our bodies are miraculous things and sickness is part of the package. And mm-hmm. dying is, generally speaking, there are rare occasions when it doesn't happen, but I'll just go to the normal occasions. We're going to die. Mm-hmm. We spend a huge amount of energy pushing that reality away, and it creates turbulence in our bodies. It creates disturbance because I'm choosing health because I don't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
We're working now to develop programs, internal shift programs, so people can claim their death and make friends with it.
Mm-hmm.
Make friends with it. Sounds radical, but it's working. And create a whole new edition of version, an edition of well-being that's juicy and more crackly than ever, because they're not pushing this natural piece of our life away,
mm-hmm.
our death.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Did I get to that pretty good?
Yeah, excellent. So then as a, say a little bit more as a healer,
mm-hmm.
and of course by healing, we mean becoming more whole,
mm-hmm.
Having all of our parts be healthy and relating
mm-hmm.
Harmoniously with all the other parts. Mm-hmm. But also healing has to do with us as individuals recognizing that we're part of something bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And interacting congruently and coherently and harmoniously and resonantly with our environment. So there's a inner healing of our parts, and then there's a, quote, external healing where we pull in, thus always becoming more, mm-hmm. always finding wholeness at higher levels. So thinking of that as healing, so how do you envision yourself? What is your stance or... who are you as a healer? Yeah.
I love that sometimes have the bells of San Miguel ringing.
Isn't that nice?
perfect marker for the day.
Yeah.
For this moment. Because the bells bring me present.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're about now. And what I've learned from what is healing for me is when people drop the trap of time.
Yes.
When they disassociate from the tyranny of the clock, not even the wristwatch, but that too, but the trap of being racked forward, backward, forward, backward, forward, backward in the memory architecture of their brain, future fast, future past, something opens in them that allows a gesture of healing. Healing for me means end of symptomology. Healing also means making peace with what is and not pushing it back, stopping the fight.
Mm-hmm.
I never fight for people. People say, well, you fight for me. I say, no, fighting always makes a mess. I grew up in fighting. Mm-hmm. I know what fighting was like. Fighting is very messy.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a mess. So I don't believe in fighting. I don't believe in the fight against anything. Because I know what fight does. I know what making peace does. It allows for space and liberty of the time torture we've lived in as people. So as someone who promotes healing, and I have a sense of knowing beings who have, through their presence, enabled healing to be transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
My heart is moved as I hold that knowing in me.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it is our birthright to know that frequency and to receive that healing. It's available mm-hmm. for all of us. Mm-hmm. We have the engine inside of each of us because we're mm-hmm. born. Healing is like being born.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that in us. Susan and I know this in ourselves because we've learned to do it. We've had to do it. we needed to do it. And we remind people of their inborn capacity to heal. Now, we have a pretty radical approach to prayer and blessing. Part of our work with people is to call forth blessings for them, to invoke a blessing, and they work with that blessing. And usually that blessing comes to them out of their divine team. And when that comes to them, it greases the wheels of liberty in them. So they have a knowing that they can heal. And by the way, healing for me, yes, I'm on the radical edge again, but I've had to be there with people. Mm-hmm. Healing includes dying. Mm-hmm. And dying with kindness. With kindness. Mm-hmm. Not terror. Imagine dying with kindness. Like, I know in this lifetime I will die with more kindness present in me than I've ever had in any other time in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, even doing this with you builds my own inner kindness engine. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's I hear what you're saying. I mean, there are so many things that, so many points in life at which there were these little deaths. It's sort of at puberty.
Yeah.
I mean, suddenly you're not the same person. The person who was has died. When you have a child that you need to take care of, you're not the same person anymore. You die into that and so forth. These points, maybe the point when it's time for you to retire or leave a job that you've known forever. And what's that going to be like? For some people, it's hell. For some people, they die from that little death.
Yeah.
They end up dying because they don't know how to release and move on. But there are those who discover how to embrace what comes. Now before people, if they're going to retire or something like that, you know, spend 6 months to a year in therapy to figure out how to take what you have and feed forward. Maybe it's the same thing when we go through the big death.
I'm really with you.
And that, yes, maybe there is hell, but maybe hell is when you hang on to your body, because what happens? That rots. Your soul doesn't rot. And so if you're ready to let go of and become more, let go and become more, the final is just sort of dropping this spent. It's like we live, you know, this is our car, this is our vehicle. You know, maybe that's why they talk about incarnation. You get a new vehicle, you just let it go.
Your hands are making this great music right now. I'm watching your hands move here, you're sitting in front of me like, I mean, yeah, we miss this natural rhythm of letting go because we're trained. Yes. We are acculturated to hold on to, well, I'm this, mm-hmm. I'm that. When I closed my studio in Austin, Texas, people came and said, well, you're David McKenzie, you can't do this. I was like, well, I have to do this. Mm-hmm. I wasn't very graceful, mm-hmm. but it had to be done. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm wanting everyone who's listening to us to get that they can have liberty in their most joyous and wild way. If they just let themselves die, it's really a good thing to what has been. And they can create a whole new, juicy life force. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And, you know, when you really think about it, there's something that we need to let go of. I mean, much more often than these big little deaths, there's the moment to moment. You know, when you suddenly discover that you had a prejudice about something that you didn't know you had, and you let that prejudice go, and suddenly you let something new into your life, but the prejudiced you has to die. When you come out of denial, you need to let that go. And in every moment, maybe there is a miracle happening in every moment. And if we can be willing to let go of, and there's something inside of us that knows what it is that needs to be let go of. As I do a lot of my teaching through music, and one of the songs that I have people sing along is, you got to know when to hold, know when to fold, know when to walk away, know when to run, you know.
Yeah.
That's the secret to life. Every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. Depends on how you play it.
I think, yeah, you are I think I know, I feel what you're saying is it's so on. And if we all can get this, like, I see that part of me that has stayed in situations that are dead, has tried to pump something, pump life into something that just needs to transform, i.e. die. But man, I keep pumping the life in there. And that's what we need to learn, that we can let something die lovingly, gracefully. What a gift for us all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so great. It's like the Buddhists who every morning begin, today's a good day to die.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
And I mean, all of Buddhism is in this one statement, the source of all suffering is wanting things to be different from how they are. You come into the moment, accept what's here. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow can be different, and you can want tomorrow to be different. Fine. But you got to take today as it is. That's the presence.
Well, there's the great gift that we all have right sitting on our next breath, mm-hmm. our very next breath.
Yeah.
That when I take a conscious breath and I bring in not just the air, not just the gases, but the very spirit of life, and I let myself, and I've been practicing more and more of this, feel that presence of life itself.
Yeah.
I'm off the clock.
Oops. Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
I just took that breath. There's that crackly live space right now, just on that one breath. And that's there for the next breath for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, okay. Now, so we have the concept of this wholeness, we have this concept of wholeness and healing that, and we've talked about it on an individual basis mm-hmm. when we're looking at the suffering and the illnesses and diseases and functions, dysfunctions that can transform. Let's take a look at our culture as a whole in this last few minutes. There's some parallels there. You've done an enormous amount of traveling and you've done an enormous amount of thinking about this culture. In particular, I'm thinking about the American culture, although that same culture is infecting a large part of the world right now. What are we doing? What is it we need to be doing? If you could speak to the country as a whole as your client?
Well, Susan and I did a trip in the summer of 2014 where we traveled on our American motorcycle 4,500 miles. We gave 9 talks, maybe 300 people or so, did 60 sessions with people. And we learned a great deal about what is the heart and soul of America calling for.
Yes.
And in each location, We gave this one piece of information and it landed differently in each place. So we started in Oak Park, Arkansas, ended up in Vista, California.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a spectrum of places, but there was this common thread that my gift, I would say Susan and David's gift that we would like to give to the country, and because we gave it to these 9 locations, was the reclaiming of the words yes and no.
Mm. Yes and no.
Yes and no. We say yes and no, I don't know, 1,000 times a day. Not just out loud, but oh yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, okay means yes.
No.
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 No, no way, yeah. So what we did was we took an experience that I had had as a co-parent. And that experience was, as the 2 children I was co-parenting were getting kicked out of a Waldorf school, which is quite an achievement.
Yes.
And I was there with my maid at the time and her ex-husband. We were all co-parenting together. And the teachers said, kind of collectively, these boys don't understand the meaning of yes or no. And it struck me quick, like lightning. And I turned to the former husband, Richard, and I said, what does no mean to you, Richard? Now, this is a guy who'd done very well in the world. A successful business guy, started a little business, made it big. He said, well, no is wishy-washy and negotiable. I was like, wow. Because he never took no for an answer. Now, this isn't about right or wrong. But as co-parents, we had never discussed, when you say yes, what do you mean? So he asked me, and I said, well, no is, I look at all the data, I look at the information, my geek brain turns on, I check the safety factors out, and unless the data set changed, no means no. So who do you think the kids went to get what they wanted? Mm-hmm. They went to him. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't go to me.
Uh-huh.
And my mate was kind of in between the two of us.
Uh-huh.
It was a revelation.
Mm-hmm.
So in each community, we had pieces of paper with yes and no in different fonts, like yes, mm-hmm. no,
mm-hmm.
yes, yes. And we had people stand up in the audience and say, how would you say this word? And people just flipped out.
Mm-hmm.
They realized they were running an infantile, two- or three-year-old. That's when we learn yes and no. Think of a two-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we learn that. And we wanted people to have the gift of their empowered yes and their empowered no, and that they could go to their mates and say, with great curiosity, when you say yes, my darling, what do you mean? So what Susan and I did first time together.
Mm-hmm.
We figured out we better know how to say yes and no if we wanted to have peace together. Now we always have peace. We learn together. We work together. But I want the country to have its empowered yes and no back. So by God, when someone says yes, they know what they mean. Mm-hmm. And they can ask somebody else who's saying yes beside them, when you say that, what do you mean? Did this with a board of directors, a banker on this board, nonprofit board. And he said, well, I'll say yes, but in about 3 weeks, I'm likely going to say no. Now, that board was notorious for not being able to hold to a decision. People just freaked out. They went, really? Because
mm-hmm.
they've never
mm-hmm.
talked about it. So I want us all, whether I'm going to decide to have a treatment, take a vitamin, do an exercise, start a relationship, end a relationship, I want us all to have our sacred yes and our sacred no in place. Susan calls it our primary binary code. Mm-hmm. Primary.
Yes.
We need to reclaim it and own it by personal definition.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for hearing me. Like I get all kind of like evangelical about this.
Uh-huh. And that leads to a lot of integrity.
It does.
When I think of integrity, I heard of when someone had asked the Mahatma Gandhi's wife, you know, how is it that Gandhi can speak so fluently on so many things, and he never uses notes, and he never contradicts himself. And she says, well, for you and me, we think one thing, we say another, and we do a third. Mm-hmm. But for Gandhiji, they're all the same.
Ah.
So if we are that clear that what we think and do and feel are all congruent, are all resonant and in alignment, then there's a power that comes forth. And it's a power that can join with the powers around us to transform the world.
I love that gesture of what you do with your hands. Your hands tell such a great story of being in sync, in harmony with our own knowing and our own truth and presence.
Excellent. I guess this is as good a place as any to stop. Let's say the death of this little conversation that we've had and the birth of wherever our relationship goes from here. I'm certainly hoping to have many more conversations with you and with a little luck to share it with our listeners out there.
Happy to. And I wish us the greatest death for what's next now.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being here on Conversations with Extraordinary People.
A pleasure for Susan and David. This is really good. Thank you for doing this. It's a joy to be with you in this. I'm honored and so glad you broadcast this out. You rock.
And further programs to help you embody the ideas and perspectives we've explored today can be found at drmiller.com. Click on the word store at the top of the page to learn more information about David and Susan's work. Don't fail to go to wisdomrx.com. Well, should I say be sure to go and check it out. And if you have any questions or comments or contributions you'd like to share with us here, please do so. Join our ongoing conversation at facebook.com/AskDrMiller or email me at drmiller@drmiller.com. So, until we meet again, by all means, stay tuned.
You've been listening to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more information about Dr. Miller's work, upcoming events, new programs, and how you can change your mind and change your life, visit his multimedia website at drmiller.com. That's drmiller.com. Conversations with Extraordinary People is produced in the drmiller.com studios. Special thanks to Jesse Churchill and Deborah Beauvais.